Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started. Welcome to the We Know Show. I have a very special guest for you today. I'm introducing Professor Ole Johansson, a neuroscientist retired from the world famous Karolinska Institute and the equally famous Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, Sweden. Both were very close associations to the Nobel Prizes in physiology and medicine, chemistry and physics. And Professor Ole Johansson was head of the experimental dermatology unit in the Department of Neuroscience at the Karolinska Institute. He is known as a world leading authority in the field of EMF radiation and its health effects. And among his many achievements, he coined the term screen dermatitis, which later on was developed into the functional impairment electrohypersensitivity, which is the recognition that is mainly due to his work, actually. So he's published more than 600 original articles, reviews, book chapters, and conference reports within the field of basic and applied neuroscience, dermatoscience, epidemiology, and biophysiology. Welcome, Ollie.
Thank you very much indeed. It sounds as if you're talking about a cousin to mine or something. I didn't know I have done all of that, but thank you very much.
No, you're very humble, Ollie, and thank you for all your incredible work. We're going to speak in length about some of the most important discoveries that you've uncovered. You are, in my opinion, one of the top, if not the top, EMF expert worldwide, and your expertise is globally known. You know, when it comes to the effect of electromagnetic radiation on health, you've got over 45 years of research and hundreds of scientific papers on your rap sheet. So can you please tell our listeners some of the top discoveries you have made when it comes to the biological health effects of EMF radiation, the ones that our listeners need to pay close attention to when it comes to their health, particularly the health of their children?
Well, there is, of course, a number of very important discoveries. And one main field has been, for me, the functional impairment electrohypersensitivity, where we very early could demonstrate cellular and molecular alterations in the skin of electrohypersensitive people that pointed to that it was just the radiation damage and nothing else. Medical doctors had tried to shove them away by telling them that they were just victims of imagination and illusion and so on, but we could then demonstrate that they had real radiation damage. And later on, I also worked a lot with the association between malignant melanomas of the skin and exposure from frequency modulated electromagnetic fields from radio broadcasts. We have also done a lot of studies in the field of impacts on immune system cells. And to make a long story short, it seems as if the immune system tries to fight out the electromagnetic fields, like from a Wi-Fi router or from a cell phone. But eventually they lose the battle and it starts to kind of leak. The immune system starts to leak and you get quite dramatic effects. And that was also later on followed up by other scientists from the United States that could demonstrate that when ordinary, should I say, household bacteria of our body, when they were exposed to Wi-Fi routers, modern such, or even old-fashioned second-generation mobile cell phones, they became antibiotic resistant. And last year, 2021, when the World Health Organization was asked if the current pandemic, the COVID pandemic, was the most horrible threat to mankind, they kind of laughed and said, no, 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 that's a small thing compared to the major threats. And the reporter said, what is the number one threat to mankind then? And then they said, antibiotic resistance in healthcare. So we have some rather big pieces of a, I would say, rather horrible jigsaw puzzle in front of us. And there is a lot to discuss and consider. And so let's see what we will aim at.
Let's talk about antibiotic resistance. What does that mean? Can you give people an explanation of this and the risks?
If I go back to the year 2017, when these American scientists published a paper headed by the researcher Tahiri and his co-workers, the very same year, the G20 countries had a special meeting here in Europe, only about the fact that more than 25,000 people at the time died prematurely in healthcare because antibiotics like penicillin didn't work any longer because the bacteria of their bodies had become resistant to it. So it didn't have any effect or impact. And that has then accelerated from then. And when I talk to, for instance, orthopedic surgeons here in Sweden, they say that this is a very major health threat and that someone needs to quickly come up with a new type of antibiotic chemical that can be used in healthcare. And in the meantime, maybe we need to say that, no, we cannot expose the bacteria any longer to cell phone radiation, wireless internet radiation, and so on, which we are doing all the time, 24/7, and without understanding that maybe we are impacting the bacteria of our bodies in such a way so they will kind of take over, you know, and very few people understand that if you count all the cells in your body, all the blood cells, all the muscle cells, all the nerve cells, and when you have counted them, more than 90%, 90% are bacteria. So they are everywhere and in colossal numbers, and they make up us. And if we don't treat them well, they can turn against us. And that's what you see in antibiotic resistance. And I can understand that the World Health Organization are scared about it, because if it runs out of our control, well, then people will start dying again of a splinter in the thumb, as we did at the end of the 19th century. Pretty horrible, I can tell you.
So for those that are listening, I mean, it should be noted that we're the only species, and Ollie, correct me if I'm wrong, that are at jeopardy. Practically all animals, plants and bacteria may be at stake, but you have, you know, you refer to a research paper, Tahiri, I think it was, where they've demonstrated that the exposure to 900 megahertz mobile phone radiation and 2.5 gigahertz radio frequency radiation, which is emitted from the common Wi-Fi router, made Listeria and coli resistant to different antibiotics. So you like, it was resistant. So can you explain to our audience, like, just in a little bit more detail, why this is putting us at jeopardy? Like, exactly why? I know you said about the thumbnail, literally, like, you just cut your thumbnail and that could be enough because it can't heal.
Yeah.
But on a wider scale, give us a picture of what that means, because everyone's got a router, everyone's got a mobile phone. So let's tell us more.
If I go back to this 2017 G20 countries meeting in Europe, they did actually an extrapolation and said that with that antibiotic resistance that was noted in healthcare, by the year 2050, they said that maybe 10 million people around the world will die prematurely. But you have to remember that the G20 countries had no idea, no knowledge at all about the paper you quoted right now by Tahiri et al. And if you combine these two instead, well, then maybe the 10 million could easily be 8 billion people dying prematurely. So, and you also mentioned that this has, of course, an impact on animals, plants, and other types of bacteria, maybe even on viruses. There are single papers already pointing to that the viruses are impacted by cell phone radiation and similar electromagnetic fields. So yes, we could actually wipe out life as we know it on this planet just by talking in our cell phones, playing games on the computer and laptops, etc.
I mean, just the fact that what we're discussing here is that the Wi-Fi and the mobile phone radiation acts on bacteria in a stressful manner and increases the antibiotic resistance. It's just, I don't think my audience has heard that before. And you know, this is a really important understanding of the entire biology of the planet. And we're going to talk to the biology many times in this conversation. But I want to jump straight into something. I want to talk about the letter to the editor that both you and Pri Bandera published back in 2017 in Radiation Protection Dosimetry. And it was pointing out some of the gaps and serious gaps and errors in the study conducted by the Australian Radiation Protection Government Agency. It's called ARPANSA here in Australia. And the letter was titled Exposure to Radio Frequency Electromagnetic Fields from Wi-Fi in Australian Schools. Now, the first significant error I would like my audience to hear about is that, and you wrote about this, is the methodology of the study, where 20 out of 23 of the classrooms they tested for Wi-Fi were in fact empty. Now, again, this is how they measure the safety of Wi-Fi in a classroom, where an average classroom uses, you know, probably around 20 devices on kids' laps, whether that's an iPad or a computer. Generally, it's not hardwired, it's wireless, and it's speaking to a router. So the measurement in the study, how is this measurement in the study representative of exposures to children that might typically be exposed to wireless devices in schools? I mean, obviously the answer is it's not typical, but I would love for you to talk into what this study does test for and what you have written in your letter, because it's absolutely fascinating.
Well, thank you very much for those words. You know, I mean, let's start first to sort of set up the scene. I would say that children is actually the only meaning of life for each generation. There is nothing else that we sort of produce that have a similar meaning. And therefore, of course, children are really the loved ones in the room. For a single person, of course, other things like money, career, achievements, and so on can be of greater importance. But for each generation, it's really only these time capsules, or children as we call them, that we throw ahead of us in time, carrying the genetic material and hopes and dreams. So in that way, what we are trying to focus on here is extremely important, not only for the parents, but for everyone. I don't have children, for instance, but I'm extremely dependent on healthy children growing up, becoming citizens of Sweden, taking jobs, earning money, paying taxes, so I can get, for instance, my retirement allowance. So we are intertwined between generations as well. And then, of course, as you say, and I have to admit, I don't even recall all the details of that particular paper, but it has been very widely quoted, to measure empty rooms and call that like a control for exposure is just completely nuts. And also the type of measurements that are done have nothing to do with real life situation. And together with Dimitris Panagopoulos and George Carvel, and Dimitris in Greece and George in the United States, we have written even a paper pointing to that only real life measurements, real life situations, real life experiments can be addressed, can ever be used. You cannot have any artificial empty rooms as your reference base. And also furthermore, as you know, when, for instance, so-called SAR measurements are done, and SAR stands for specific absorption rate, again, we have done a paper particular about that, pointing to that it can never be used for live human or animal or plant material in any way, because what they use as a reference there is fluid-filled plastic head or plastic doll. And with all due respect, not even Swedish children are fluid-filled plastic dolls, you know. And also the exposure they use is between 6, 10, or 30 minutes at most in a completely radiation-free environment. And a single call, if you call it like that, and then you are never, ever exposed again in your lifetime. And I just ask, how many would buy a cell phone, use it for one single call, 6, 10, or 30 minutes long, and then never again be exposed to any man-made artificial electromagnetic fields? Of course, no one. So all these measurements are, I don't know, the proper English word, it's just madness, you know, and it still continues. And before this interview, we talked a little bit about that, who are actually responsible for doing all these safety testings. And in various countries, there are various authorities, but most countries, I think they just assume that all these gadgets on the wall, in the hand of the children, in the hands of the teacher and so on, they are, and I quote, safe. So there is no need to do any safety measurements. At the same time, you know, you have different levels of safety here, and maybe we will come into that later on. We also have like behavioral, learning, memory, and so on, real health medical effects, like impacts on fertility, heart disease, damage to the genomic material, diabetes, oxidative stress, etc., etc., etc. So there are very many. And to expose children to this in an uncontrolled way, well, that's the modern society. I mean, my advice is to maybe try to de-smart your both living situation back home, but also in schools. And don't forget the homes, because in the homes, there could be a massive exposure from all the fun gadgets. So they have to be taken into the account as well. But sometimes maybe parents and teachers need to have the guts to live in reality rather than on the internet.
Gosh, that's powerful. Now, for everyone listening, here's a little recap. Wi-Fi is safe for kids in schools, well, here in Australia, and this is very even unlike most places in the world where they don't even test for safety of Wi-Fi in schools at all. But in this particular test, which is the regulatory body for, you know, wireless radiation industry, 20 out of 23 classrooms had no human beings in there, not a teacher and not a student. And if you thought that that was a dummy test, don't forget what Ollie just said. They test mobile phones for safety on a plastic mannequin called Sam, which is specific anthropomorphic mannequin. And they check him on average around 6 minutes, sometimes 10, sometimes 30 minutes on a call to see if the temperature increased in this dummy's head. And as we know, this is not a biological test. And it's no way to measure biological safety of wireless radiation. So we've got a dummy test on the Wi-Fi in the schools. We've got a dummy test for mobile phones. Clearly, my next question is going to be, why would anybody trust the regulatory bodies at this point?
Well, that's more than enigmatic, I would say, you know. And we have written a number of articles about this, and also been part of interviews of various nature pointing to that this cannot be trusted, not at all, you know. And now single schools around the world, they are trying to get rid of the wireless, go to shielded wired, And some schools even try to get rid of the computers whatsoever. And it's fascinating to see that, for instance, in China, the pupils and students are not allowed to bring their cell phones and other gadgets into the school room. And I think it's not so much about health effects, but more, should I call it, concentration effects. Because, you know, China has a very simple business model. They just want to own everything, including Australia and Sweden. And to do that, they need to have the very best schooling system and the very best pupils and students. And then they cannot allow them to occupy time with whatever they do, surfing the internet or playing games or looking for facts on Google or whatever. No, they have to only listen to the teacher, giving them all the knowledge they need for their future work to conquer the world, I would call it, you know. So, and I don't mind. I love Chinese people, so I don't mind. But I think we need to think twice about how these gadgets also are used. And in what way? And believe me, there are no such safety in these tests. They are just ridiculous, you know. And any adult I confront, they immediately realize this. And I could tell you a short story, and I'm kind of jumping sideways a little bit, but it has a big bearing, actually. And last year, I took a train ride on a commuter train here in Stockholm. And since no one, apart from you, Rina, knows who I am, you know, I always take the opportunity to educate and inform people. And right beside me was a very posh lady in her 60s. And I leant towards her and said, well, I see you have one of these smartphones. And do you know that the World Health Organization in Geneva, in Switzerland, has cancer classified the radiation that comes to the cell phone and from it? And she went, I think you say, ballistic. She got very angry with me and told me basically to mind my own business and go to a hot place somewhere, you know. And I said, no, wait. You have this smartphone and you have Google on it, I suppose. Couldn't you please Google WHO brain tumor and cell phone radiation, and just see if something comes up? And she went silent for a couple of minutes, and then slowly she looked up at me and said, "It's all here. You are completely right. I'm so sorry. I yelled at you. I'm very, very sorry. But now I get angry again," she said, "not at you, but at my own government, parliament, and health authorities. Why have they not informed me about this? You see, I'm not only a mother," she said, "I'm also a grandmother. And a week ago, I gave my granddaughter a new cell phone, and now I regret it." What happened later on, I don't know, because I had to get off the train at the station. So it's like seeding mental seeds into the brain of people, and they should start thinking. And this safe gadget, how safe is it actually? And for me, what is particularly worrying is, of course, the impact on sperm cells and egg cells and fertility. And to make a long story short, when you allow sperm cells to be exposed, then they will change their appearance, their morphology, their motility will go down, and a lot of other such factors will decrease in quality. And I see other scientists pointing to that maybe as early as 2050 already, most men and women would need assisted fertilization to get pregnant. Is that a future we want to have? Why doesn't anyone react? I have tried here in Sweden to wake up the health authorities, the radiation protection authorities, and by writing together with Pribadara, also in other countries, including Australia, just wake them up and say, hey, shouldn't you look at this? Shouldn't you give independent scientists the means to try to replicate and detail what's actually going on. And no one would be more happy than I would be if it turned out to be no risk. But then we need to look around in the room, you know, what is actually causing this dramatic decrease in sperm cell quality and fertility rates.
Wow. I mean, has there been any progress, Ollie, in the scientific community towards safe levels of, you know, RF internationally?
Oh, yeah. In the scientific world, there are a lot of papers going way back in time, actually. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm right on this. The very first person pointing to a safe exposure level was actually me. And that was in 1997 and at the trade union meeting here in Stockholm. And I pointed to that, given the research at that time, and you know, since then, there are so many other papers being added to this. But at that time, the only safe exposure would be the natural background levels. In plain English, turn it off. That's the only safe level, and that hasn't changed since then. But people try to be, should I say, practical. So they want to propose a level much, much higher, but still lower compared to what you allow today to make it still functional. And I don't buy into that. You know, I'm not here on this planet to be practical or convenient for anyone else. And I often, and I know it's brutal and blunt, but that's the way Swedes are, you know. I always compare to other things we say no to. Let me give you one example. Childhood pornography. We wouldn't allow a little bit of it, a few meters of film, a few videos and so on. No, it's just a complete no. And that's what I mean here too. If we see such dramatic effects, like on bacteria and antibiotic resistance, on fertility and sperm cell quality, on the immune system cells and the immune protection, which is very much in focus right now after this huge pandemic, and a lot of other such impacts, like on plants, for instance, why are so few reacting to it? And I could give you another story. I was recently in France for a field trip during the week which the Nobel Prize in Literature was announced to be given to Annie Ernaux. And therefore, I went around in France, in Paris, and to the west of Paris, interviewing people on random, in restaurants, coffee shops, on squares, in trains, trams, buses, wherever. And my first question was always, have you read something by Annie Ernaux? And believe it or not, very few people knew who she was, actually, you know. But everyone, 100%, knew that there is a dramatic loss of so-called pollinators, the insects like honeybees responsible for pollination and therefore for food production, food that is supposed to be eaten by our children. And everyone knew about that. I remember a particular young woman at the restaurant. She was sitting in a big group and she burst into tears. She was crying and said, I don't know what's going to happen with my future children and grandchildren. And I'm so scared, she said. And also when we went to the hotel in Lorient, which is a town on the west coast of France, one morning the breakfast responsible person, the receptionist, he turned to us and said, well, you have to enjoy the breakfast honey, because this is the last year we can serve it. The honey, the beekeeper has announced that he cannot deliver any more honey because the number of bees have gone down so dramatically. And therefore, the volume of honey produced is so small, so he can only keep it for his own family. And this man didn't know why we were there, you know. And I just looked in horror, I would say. And I said, what? You are just telling me now what I'm here to investigate. And he, of course, also looked shocked. Wow. I mean, they didn't know about the Nobel Prize.
What happens to our bees as a result of the proliferation of this technology of wireless radiation?
Yeah, this is a very, very important area, you know, because insects like honeybees, bumblebees, houseflies, butterflies and so on, they are in the size that is exactly resonant, as we say, with the modern Wi-Fi and cell phone radiation waves. So they are very much impacted. Maybe some of your audience will remember, like in the 1950s and 60s, when the FM radio was introduced and everyone had what we call in Sweden a transistor radio, a small radio often in the kitchen with a bad reception. And then my father would stand up and grab the big metal antenna, you know, and suddenly the reception was much, much better because my dad was, of course, an excellent antenna that was resonant with FM radio, which has a wavelength around 1.5 to 3 meters in that order. And now we have shortened the wavelength by increasing the frequency. So now instead, the insects are the receivers of these colossal amounts of energy. And for your listeners and viewers here, remember that the allowed level for instance, the third generation mobile telephony compared to the natural background is a quintillion times higher.
That's
the one with the 18 zeros. Mm. So the word colossal sounds a little bit small in my ears. Sometimes I say astronomically higher or even biblically higher exposure levels. And furthermore, of course, the third generation and other man-made exposures, they're not natural because they are pulsed, they're modulated, they're polarized, etc., in such a way. So the increase compared to the natural background is actually much, much higher than only a quintillion times. And no one seems to pay any attention to it. And that's what I would say the most stressful for me. I often feel that I try to wake, as I said, people in governments, parliaments, health authorities, radiation protection authorities all over the world. But they don't respond. They don't look up. They don't start the conversation. And I've written, for instance, to the United Nations. I've written to the World Health Organization and so forth. And they don't even reply, not with a single thank you for the letter or anything, nothing, just nothing, you know. And
thank you, Ollie, for the letters to the UN and the World Health Organization on behalf of all of us. Thank you.
Yeah.
I did want to quickly ask you, have you got, because your computer seems to be shaking a little bit when you're speaking, so I'm wondering if it's sitting on anything flat. No, it is.
No, I don't know.
That's
now
right.
I'm shaking. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
You say UN and World Health Organization, yeah, and you start to shake, Ollie. Look, I'm not sure that I've spoken with any EMF scientists on this podcast about transhumanism, so congratulations, Ollie. You're the first. It's a huge topic to cover, and I definitely want to go through this with you now. So, in fact, we did have a conversation about this prior to recording this interview around AI and your perspective of it. And I found it really fascinating. So I'm really looking forward to my audience hearing about it. But also just in the last few weeks, you know, AI art is trending on social media, very much trending. So people are loading their photos and seeing, you know, the AI version of art. And it's a hot topic, you know, it's a hot topic for so many reasons. And I'm passionate about it, I have to say, because it does on some level, you know, does threaten human life and, you know, ethics and free will and bodily sovereignty. But I really enjoyed hearing your perspective before we hit record, and I can't wait for my audience to hear about it. But you also co-authored and you published an article back in July 2021 in Academia, and it was titled Technological Singularity, Knowledge, Translation, and Ethics. And in the describing of this techno science, you know, this is what's driving this paradigm shift, you say, you argue that scientific evidence for harm for electromagnetic radiation has been suppressed. But you also say this quote, you say this comes as an industry has deployed the laws of physics to alter knowledge, changing our relationships to matter. So I want you to talk into all of it, and I don't know where you want to start, but go.
Okay, thank you. Right now I'm actually writing yet another article about artificial intelligence, because I'm also very interested in the concept as such. I want to be sort of looking in an independent way to see what the risks are. And you point to all the ethical issues here, which are manifold, I would say. And also, if there are advantages and assets that could be used in a good way. And I could start maybe by telling you about some projects in Africa that points to big achievements for people. And for instance, they have developed kind of an artificial AI glasses. When you put them on and you are blind, you will look at things, if you can say like that, and the glasses will translate the image and tell you in real time what you actually are looking at. And you will get a complete image that way. And that, of course, will help a person to get around in the physical world in a very elegant and advanced way. And similar gadgets are used for instance, language translation. If you have a hearing deficit, you're deaf, and people are talking to you, you can have glasses, AI glasses, that will translate the spoken word into text in real time in front of you, so you can immediately read what people say. You don't have to struggle with lip reading or sign language, and maybe the person that is talking to you even don't even know sign language, so you are in a real jeopardy, but you just get it in real-time text, and it could be saved, and you can go back later on if you want to review what was said, for instance, at a conference, and that could be very elegant to be that, and that would include people much more with different functional impairments, of course. But then at the other end of the spectrum, as you say, there are these horrible mechanical robots that are integrated with human flesh, like you have probably seen the Schwarzenegger movie, The Terminator. I always say anything and everything is possible at this moment in time. I don't see at all any interest from the consumers here in Sweden, at least. They are not asking for any such Terminators. They more want to run their ordinary life, looking for the lost mitten for their child, cooking food for the family, buying groceries, going to a movie perhaps in the evening, and that's about it. And in the movie, of course, they can enjoy a movie with Schwarzenegger playing such a robot. But I think many of these projects and dreams are within the skulls of very few people yet. And during my lifetime, I've seen many technocratical projects just not doing it. Because of the consumers. And I remember that must have been in 2019, I went to Finland, the neighboring country here, to do measurements of radiation in Uleåborg is the name of the town. And it's a hub for the Internet of Things And after that, the internet of bodies, where we should be connected through all the gadgets we have, including the refrigerator and freezer and toaster and whatnot, and the car, etc. But also the internet of bodies, that we should automatically be connected to the society in the form of a giant digital brain or digital body, whatever you would call it. But the funny thing was, when I talked to, and they were really the CEOs of these companies there, they said that, no, this will not fly, because there are so very few consumers that want to have like a super intelligent home where you would control everything through your voice or your eyes or whatever. People don't want it, and therefore there will be no market worth the name. And therefore, they said most risk capitalists are leaving these areas, looking for other areas where they could invest and grow their money. And for me, that was hopeful, because I often believe in that mankind is, as a giant body, very intelligent. But also, maybe you should say a little bit practical or lazy. And it's just too much. Already years ago, people here in Sweden started to forget their cell phone back home or at workplace, because they didn't want to have more calls that day. They were fed up, you know, and they had done all the word feud and all the other games and so on. So they just wanted to retreat and relax from all these gadgets. And that I see more and more. And what they said up in Uleåborg was that perhaps we will see some autonomous vehicles, for instance, self-driving cars and buses and trains, ships, aircrafts, maybe. But they were not 100% sure. And like here now, you know, it's winter, and the roads are covered in ice and snow and so on. And I'm not sure all these vehicles will function as well as a human driver. And of course, there are projects ongoing, I know that, but it's really up to the consumers. And finally, I remember when I went to the European Union one year, and that's like 30 years ago or something like that. And I remember talking about the future, and it wasn't as advanced as transhumanism at that time, but all the different gadgets that were proposed to be manufactured and sold. And then I remember that the European Union parliamentarian, he pointed to that I shouldn't raise issues like this in the public, because the public could get the wrong idea and turn against not only the manufacturers, but also against the European Union. And he said the moment the citizens of countries in the European Union says, no, thank you, then there is no union any longer. So he asked me not to spread all these ideas around, which I didn't bother about listening to, of course. And a few years later on, you had Brexit. And you can think whatever you want about Brexit, but it showed that the consumers, the citizens, the constituents, they are the ones in power. It's not Elon Musk, even if he has hundreds of millions of dollars or billions or whatever they are. He's just one man to fight 8 billion other people and 8 billion people around the world with a colossal amount of money at their hand. So, I mean, I'm sort of positive and practical viewing around, and I see that people, they are not so impressed by all these things and gadgets and inventions. And much of this discussion is only taking place on the internet, really, and not so much in the real world. Again, the real world is about reality, and the reality is not technocratic, it's not transhumanistic, it's not so flashy. You know, it's just wiping the button of a baby for poop, you know, it's not more than that.
Oh, thanks, Ollie. That was really inspiring to hear. I have to say, you know, scientists are saying, you know, first of all, there is no such thing as free will, and science is familiar with there's just two kinds of processes in nature. And you know, you talked about you have the deterministic processes and you have the random processes. Then, of course, you have combinations of randomness and determinism. But none of that is what Yuval Harari calls freedom. He says freedom has no meaning, whether it's from a physical or biological perspective, it's just another myth. This is a top advisor to the World Economic Forum, Professor Yuval Harari. And, you know, when they talk about replacing organisms with algorithms, and I mean, you literally have to listen to these megalomaniacs, and you're right. I mean, there's 8 billion people that have to make a choice. And I'm not suggesting that 8 billion people have a good history of making the right choice, but in many instances they have. And I'm hoping and I'm having faith that when it comes to this transhumanism agenda, there'll be enough people that say no to it, in much the same way they're saying no to, you know, baby nappies with Bluetooth that informs you once your baby's done a poop or, you know, or a wee. So there's lunacy in technology, we know that, and it's just a matter of whether or not humanity will buy into it or not. And that's interesting that you've got such an incredibly optimistic perspective of humanity, which is great. But, and I have to say I do too. So,
But, you know, don't forget that the real driver for many people is, of course, greed, profit, that kind of thing, and career, titles, whatever. And for me, it's disturbing right now, very disturbing, to see that people spend days and days and days watching football, but they don't spend a second on the fact that more than 90% of the American bumblebees went missing last year when they were counted, and this year more than 90% of the honeybees in Canada are just gone, and already in 2017 more than 75% of all pollinators, all categories in Germany, gone. And when I look around in Sweden, there's a dramatic decline. And again, without pollinators, then you cannot grow food any longer in the same way. The pollination will be gone, and there will be nothing to eat from the shelves of vegetables, nuts, and fruit. I'm surprised that adults don't pay more attention to this. And as you say, humans are not famous of being intelligent. And I know we are called Homo sapiens, the wise man, you know. But sometimes I feel that maybe we are more of a Homo destructus. It's a lot of things that get destroyed around the world, through different activities like mining, for instance, and also that we are not that intelligent. Maybe we are more of a Homo stupidensis compared to other species. And we don't have any God-given right to destroy the life for other species. And the other species, they are in the order of 8.7 million. And maybe, for instance, the antibiotic resistance can be seen as a reaction from bacteria and saying, no more, enough is enough, you know. And then Harari and other transhumanist proposers will have nothing to deal with, you know. And so I'm both optimistic, I'm realistic, and a little bit pessimistic. And especially the latter, when I go around in Stockholm and see the amount of automation, very many cash registers at food courts nowadays and food stores, they are automatic. And that means that a man or a lady is out of job. And I was this year even, down in West Africa, watching how mechanization and automation would rid a lot of African men, particularly, of their income, because they were not needed any longer. And I don't like it. I think we must actually readdress ourselves in the term Homo sapiens. Mm. We must stand up and be much more wise and intelligent. And intelligence as such doesn't work if you're not also wise and can use it in a good way, supporting life. And as you know, Renat, I have also written the Stockholm Declaration, pointing to that we need a life electromagnetic compatibility regulation, meaning that all gadgets, and you can expand this to anything, plastics or mining or whatever, that it should always be safe for all life forms. And as you know, today we are as a species destroying so much, and we need to take many, many steps backwards on the intelligence scale, I would say, and go in another direction. And if we don't do it, well, then there are big question marks ahead of us, you know, and only the future will know if we were right or wrong. And as a mental fire brigade soldier, of course I want to be wrong, you know. I want to wake up and feel that, no, all these gadgets, they were safe. There's no problem. But then I need to investigate it. And I'm very disturbed that when we try to apply for money, we are met with a no. We, for instance, applied for a project regarding the pollinators and impact on body resonant electromagnetic fields, like from Wi-Fi and cell phone radiation. And it was just no. How did they know that we didn't need to investigate that? What were the reasoning behind that? And were they actually wrong and we were right? Only the future will know.
Mm. I mean, something we always come back to is these gadgets, even AI, it's engineered, and we're created by nature and divinity. So, you know, you've summarized it beautifully, Ollie, when you said, you know, how do we outsmart AI? How do humans outsmart AI? Is we get in touch with our humanness again, and our humanness is related to all biology and all of nature. And I think that's a really important message for our audience.
Very true indeed. Very true. Yes.
Now, one of the areas of health where you and I can contribute is behavior change, you know, through finding safe tech alternatives and being able to educate the public on things like what you've said, you know, throughout this entire interview, just talking to people on the street. Most people wouldn't dare to do that because they have a fear of how they may be seen. Now, let me tell you, for those of you that are seen with AirPods in your ears, I'm sorry to have to sound judgmental, but you look like modern day Martians. This wearable technology in your head, and I want Ollie to speak to it as a scientist. I want you to tell people what these AirPods are actually doing to your brain. And for that, for all matter, actually, in terms of like wearable technology, whether it's your Fitbit or your Apple Watch or even just wearing a mobile phone in your pocket, how much that's proliferating your body with you know, this radiation. And I know Christmas is coming up, Ollie, and for many of you who will be listening, you'll probably be wondering whether or not you bought that device for your child or for your loved one, and you'll think twice about it. But, you know, this is damaging our biology. There is no doubt. There is no debate about it anymore. So what do you want, Ollie, to tell people about these AirPods and what they should be paying attention to? What is it doing? What is wearable tech doing?
Well, I mean, it's doing the same as all electromagnetic field-based technology. But, of course, you have it right into your ears, and one of them is the sender and will send or transmit the electromagnetic signal right through your head, actually, to the other one and activate it, and you get stereo sound and that kind of things. And when these electromagnetic fields run through your head, scientists have shown a lot of different impacts, like on the electroencephalographic pattern, the electrical activity of the nerve cells. They are impacted in a negative way. And also the sleep cycle in the night are impacted. Learning and memory, that was actually found already in the 1990s in animal studies. And to make a long story short, American scientists headed by Henry Lai in Seattle, the University of Washington, showed that rats that were exposed to Bluetooth irradiation, 2.45 gigahertz, they would do less well in a maze finding food. And to summarize, they lost part of their concentration capacity and short-term memory. And then I remember a fellow of mine here in Stockholm said, well, isn't that good? You know, then the rats will not find food and they are a famine and they would just die then probably. Well, maybe. But then other scientists did studies on boys that should solve a linguistic test. And in a double-blind fashion, they were exposed to cell phone radiation, and then they did the test less well. In plain English, they were dumbed down by the radiation, and you said they look like Martians, and being this rude and blunt Swede, maybe I could add and say, well, sometimes they look like pretty dumb Martians even, you know, and maybe they actually are becoming that. And other scientists have shown in, I think it was mouse models, that nerve cells in the brain, particularly in the area responsible for memory, they were damaged and even they saw cell death. And those studies were very, very meticulously done and very well controlled. And that leads me to another thing really that is important. I see so many studies coming up, being published, and then they are never allowed to be replicated, which is the golden standard, really, in science. And it's like someone, and I don't know who, is trying to bury all the important information. You can, of course, it will still be there, but you can always argue, yeah, that's just one study, it doesn't mean so much. Yeah, but let us replicate. And I have tried here in Sweden to get money and failed, I would say, to replicate, for instance, the bacterial studies, the studies on sperm cells, on immune cells, and so forth. And every time I've been met with a no, thank you, which is kind of scary in the sense that maybe we are saying and pointing to the wolf and saying, oh, it's a wolf there, you know, better take care. And then everyone turns their back on the wolf. Is that the Homo sapiens or the Homo stupidensis? I don't know.
You know, you've got to wonder
and,
though.
And in the meantime, you know, people are using their AirPods to listen to music, news and whatever, and checking the scores in the football and so on, maybe turning away from the really important issues.
Yeah. You know, I often wonder, you've talked about bacteria and just the risk on all of life, right? And we don't need to go through the countless ridiculous, stupid dummy tests that they do in the regulatory bodies, but you know, with all this chronic illness that's on the horizon as a result of wireless radiation and the impact on our bees, and I wonder whether, you know, they're promoting this metaverse and the film industry heavily promoting it as well as a way to escape the chronic pain, as a way to escape the humanness. And I'm starting to notice, I've been noticing it for quite some time, but I'm starting to talk about it more, which is that there is, for me, like when you say somebody is trying, like it's a real clear agenda of sorts to move us out of our bodies. Even the internet of bodies is moving you out of control, of out of your own authority on your body. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't really have many thoughts on it apart from yours. And I sometimes feel that is someone, and I say it again, I don't know who that is, trying to get us to enter, like you say, the metaverse, instead of seeing the downfall around us, not bothering about the loss of the pollinators, the loss of fruit and vegetables in the food store and so on. Because in the metaverse world, you will have everything there. But I don't want to live like that personally, no. You know. And I respect, of course, if someone wants to. But I say again, I don't think the consumers are very interested. You know, last year, I think it was 2021, there was a technical program in the Swedish public TV. And they went home to a family that had built an intelligent home. And that was so interesting to see, because the young man of the family, he was running around, really running around like a madman, you know, and shouting things like, lights on, lights off, and so on. And they were filming him. And, you know, when you move a camera around a room, then suddenly you saw his children and his spouse. They didn't look amused. I think they felt he was silly. And at least from my point of view, if I would see a man, I didn't find him sexy at all. And, you know, and wow. No, it was just so silly, you know. Yeah. And I felt that, is this what we are going to have in the future? Then I say, no, thank you. But of course, I'm old, so I don't count very much more as a consumer. But again, no, I don't see many people interested in this. To be honest, among all my friends I have, and I have quite a few, there's only one, what I would call techno nerd. And going back to what I talked about from Finland and Uleåborg, they said that the market in Sweden would be in the order of 1,000 people. And there are 10 million people living here. And of course, such a small market cannot be economically driven at all, you know. Mm-hmm. And you have to remember also, Sweden is a very rich country. People can afford to have an intelligent home, yes. But what about Africa, South America, Central America, most parts of Asia and so on, that they just struggle to survive every day, you know, not knowing if their children will have anything to eat tomorrow. They cannot go into metaverse or intelligent homes or anything. So, no. No, I don't believe very much in it, but it's interesting to follow. And I say again, it's like the bully in the school. You have to monitor her or him 24/7 to keep an eye always on that child and help and support her or him. Don't imagine that everyone, will turn into bullies just because of that child.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Thank you, Ollie. And obviously, you know, we don't know. There's so much we do not know. And we have to acknowledge that, you know, there's a lot yet to be seen. And, you know, we've talked about at length, you know, you and I in private conversations around the proliferation of 5G on the ground and in space. And yeah, we're speculating that people are going to be buying into this technology. They have already started to. How far will it go? We don't know. We know how bad wireless radiation is. We don't want it to be proliferated even further and closer to our bodies and our homes and our children. But that is the trajectory that we are on. And there is, you know, World Economic Forum do talk about post-humanism and transhumanism and all of that stuff. So at the very end, the responsibility for the future we live in is down to the consumer, is down to us and what we decide to do within our own communities and within our own households. And you've you know, articulated that brilliantly. But my last question, Ollie, to you, before we wrap things up, and I'd like for you to end by giving people some information on where they can find and support your work, is why do you do what you do? Given all this that we've talked about today and the fact that the regulatory bodies, even the UN and the World Health Organization, like you said, have ignored independent scientists like yourself for decades, why do you do what you do? Because it's, for me, obviously very inspiring, but I want people to hear it.
Well, I think the answer to that is very simple. Every time I meet a family, a neighboring family here, they have a one-year-old child and they have a lovely British long-haired cat. Those two is really the answer, you know. It's for them. And I think we have a responsibility as adults to always stand up for the future and for children, animals, plants, bacteria, whatever. And it's very simple. And the reason I think like that is because of my, well, I would say particularly grandmother, my mother, my father, and also my uncle, because they always taught us to, well, it sounds maybe silly to some, but it's like a Christian moral ethics. And as such, you don't walk away from children or animals or anything, you know. So that's the simple answer. But I have to admit that some mornings when I wake up, well, I think that, well, should I do something else instead, you know? Because as you say, you know, the passive opposition from people in power that don't even bother to send an automatic response like, thank you so much, or we will put it in our files or something. Nothing, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. And also you mentioned that people can generously support us if they want to. And people do. Yes, thank you very much indeed. And that's the only way I can, together with my colleagues, really survive. And I know everyone is rightfully looking for support, and we are as well. And no gift is too small, and don't hesitate, please give. And remember, if you give a dollar today, you need to give another dollar next month or next week, because we do continue to try to investigate this. And my dream is, of course, that the big mama and the big papa in the form of governments and parliaments and authorities will call me and say, Ole, we need you. You will get all the resources you need, because we have some big issues at hand here, you know. We need to know, is all this radiation deleterious for sperm cells, for bacteria and so on, or not? So we need an independent scientist to investigate this, but no one is calling, you know. And yeah, we are
45 years of, yeah, as we said, your research and your appeals to the UN and papers and your talks that you've given and lobbying the governments and all of the things. I mean, the people, you're on the right side of history. We know this. And, you know, whether or not they give you that call or not, the research you have conducted and the talks that you have given have left an imprint on people like myself and obviously the people that are listening today to this interview. And where can people go to financially support your work, Ollie? Is there a website, anything you can tell? Yes, we'll pop it into the show notes. But if you could just give people a bit of a rundown of where they can find you and keep up to date with your research and all the work that you're doing, that would be wonderful.
We have a fundraiser call, and if you are kind enough to post,
I will.
And in it, it's very simple to use. Either you use PayPal, and I would say 99% use that option, But if you want to do a direct bank transfer, there are details about it as well. And these are the two options you can use. We are actually trying together with colleagues and friends in Denmark and England to set up a more, should we call it a formal charity, and maybe connect it like to some MasterCard or whatever option. But unfortunately, here in Sweden, both of these are very expensive to set up and to maintain. So they would drain most of the money we get. So then we need some more generous millionaire. Maybe could listen to this and send a few of his dollars.
I'll send it to a few of my millionaire friends, Ole. thank you so much for this interview. For everybody listening, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And please don't forget to subscribe to the We Know Show so you can get an update every single time we have a new interview out. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.
There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection, but now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of The We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.